A lady who visits us from time to time and listens carefully came up to me last Sunday after the sermon and said, as well as I can remember, something like this: I usually learn something from your message, but what you said today, doesn't everybody already know all those things? I thought that perhaps not everybody did, but I couldn't be sure, so all I said rather lamely was that I supposed we needed to be reminded once in a while. So let me confess in this final talk in a short series about language that there won't be anything very startling this morning in what I'm about to say. My proposal is accepted in theory by many churches, although it's practiced by almost none. It's radical in the original sense of that word. That is, it goes back to the very roots of Christianity. It can be put in a single sentence: the distinction we make between clergy and laity, the way we use the word minister to refer to one special class, is unknown in the New Testament, distorts the original nature and intention of the church, and has caused considerable harm in the evolution of organized religion. In the beginning, in the first century, every member of the church was a minister, a word for one who serves. If Paul's young friend Timothy was a minister because he spoke in public, Martha was a minister equally because she served in private. I heard a seminary president say to a group of graduating preachers soon to be ordained these words one time: you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people, in order that you may declare the wonderful deeds of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. It bothered me. The words are a quotation from the Apostle Peter, but he wrote them not to a graduating class of soon-to-be clergymen, but to people like us. Not to a select few who plan to preach, but to all of us who are a part of the church. I've often thought how ironic it is that Peter, who would later be thought of as the first priest in the long line of priests and popes, should have written a letter in which he called all of us priests. Everywhere in the New Testament, the idea is the same. The church is not an organization served by one or two professional ministers, but a group of ministers who serve. Because we don't know this, or perhaps because we so easily forget it, we sometimes talk about what we call a lay ministry. That's supposed to describe a non-ordained, non-seminary trained preacher. But there is no ministry other than lay ministry, because the word laity comes from laos, meaning the people, and men like me who preach are of the people and not separate from them. Given his very different tradition and theology, A Roman Catholic priest can properly talk about a layperson. We can't. Not if we understand how things were at the first. Newspapers write sometimes about a ministerial shortage. The early church could not have imagined such a problem because every member of the church was a minister. I read about a church last week that is, quote, currently without a minister. In proper usage, that's like saying a congregation without a member. I know I'm not likely to change your vocabulary habits because that would make you seem odd among your friends, but I do like to remind you that many of our friends have lost the idea of what the church was originally meant to be. Oh, here and there somebody tries to remind us. I know a Methodist minister who identifies his congregation in the responsive readings as, in capital letters, all the ministers of this church, and then identifies himself as pulpit minister. In other words, one of the many, the one called to serve with his mouth. He has the right idea, although his crusade is quixotic and probably doomed to failure. He does have support from his peers, and I feel more comfortable when I can tell you that I am not alone in my linguistic peculiarities. There isn't time to read supporting statements from J.B. Phillips, John Stott, Michael Green, the late C.S. Lewis, and others who knew the scriptures well. But here is a short summary from an Anglican church official who said these words to a group meeting in Coventry, England. All orders are holy. Plumbers are as much in holy orders as the clergy, serving God and their fellows. Electricians, park keepers, doctors, and typists are all working as much with the things of God as the priest with the sacrament. Now, this man is not one of our denomination. He is a member of a church from which remarks like that do not seem highly likely, but he speaks the truth of a classic congregationalism as well as any of us could speak it. And another Anglican in the country where congregationalism was born writes a scorching paragraph of support in the London Church Times. Bishop Stephen Bain. There is nobody stuffier than a parson who is acutely conscious of the privileges of his order, of his monopoly of theological learning, liturgical authority, general sanctity, and so on. The worst of it is, says Bishop Bain, that the laity so often believe in all this nonsense and put the sacred ministry on a pedestal until they feel that the only way a man can serve God is by being ordained. One of the small token gestures I have made towards implementing this idea of the ministry of all the saints has been a request to board presidents in this church when we have meetings to call on other ministers to open the meeting with prayer. They have honored the request, and the result has been prayers of simple eloquence that have made us all grow. those of us who listened, and those of us who spoke. I need to hear my fellow ministers in this church speak to God in prayer quite as much as you have need to hear someone on Sunday morning. I heard a young man speak the other day of his plans to enter the ministry. He is a teacher. And I wanted to say, you are already in the ministry. But I try to save remarks like that for Sunday mornings when there's a chance I will be understood and forgiven. But I would have meant it. It takes more of the patience and wisdom and love of Christ to teach the fifth grade by far than it does to hire out to an upper class church in the suburbs or to dash off to Switzerland as a missionary. It's much harder, in my view, to be a Christian minister of medicine or of law or of business than it is to be a pulpit minister in a church where people of like minds, generally not quarreling, meet for a while on Sunday morning with pleasant faces and clean clothes. And to pick one more kind of ministry, think what a marvelous opportunity the Christian nurse has to serve her faith. She can say to someone when she tucks them in at night, God bless you and give you a good night's sleep, and I will remember you in my prayers. It would take a good and sensitive friend as a pulpit minister to match her mercy and her comfort. I puzzle somebody about once a week by insisting that I am embarrassed by the word reverend used as a title. I am embarrassed because that word appears only once in the entire Bible, in the 111th Psalm, where the poet, speaking of God himself, says, "Holy and reverend is his name." It has not helped to promote the priesthood of all believers, the ministry of all the saints, for pulpit servants to appropriate a title used only once in the Bible and applied then to God. Many pulpit ministers, to their credit, have felt the absurdity of it and have hoped people would drop it. Some of you in this room, I know for a fact, once listened to a superb pulpit minister in Lawrence years ago who made this comment when he took a leave of absence. He said, "One of the things I look forward to in my year outside the church is the opportunity to live and move without the title reverend. I just want the experience of seeing how it affects my life with others." Ron Sunby went on to talk about how the title cuts a pulpit minister off from real life. "Once people find out you're a reverend," he said, "they begin acting differently. And let me tell you, they do. They think they have to discuss religion or ask for a prayer or be very nicey nice or, and this is more common, get away from you as soon as possible." He said, "I shall never forget a call I made when I was at my church in Topeka. I went to see a family about joining the church. The man, apparently, was expecting a friend and had forgotten all about our appointment. After I rang the doorbell, he came to the door with a beer can, which he shoved in my face as he shouted, "Hi." I said, "Hi, I'm Reverend Sunday." He said, "Oh my God," and leaped back into the house. It was a full 5 minutes before he could bring himself to let me in. I sympathize with Ron Sunby's wish to live for a while without his alienating title, because it does alienate from many of the people one would like to know, even when it is used with deference as a kind of compliment. I used to go to a place where people who did hard physical labor would line up at a counter to buy the things they needed for the day. One of the clerks had discovered somehow that I had something to do with preaching, and so anytime I showed up in that line, he would smile broadly and shout, "Good morning, Reverend." He only meant to be friendly and to make me happy, but I could almost feel a physical spasm hit his customers who were lined up with me. It was not that they became hostile, just that they felt uncomfortable all of a sudden in the presence of this abnormal thing. They stiffened up a bit. I don't know whether if you'd been there, you would have seen a physical shrinking in away from me, but there was a psychic shrinking, and I felt it. It inhibited their speech. You know what I mean. In the famous words of Emerson, my title, my calling, had the unfortunate effect of disfranchising me from the real lives of ordinary people. Now, how could there be a greater loss for a man called to a ministry like this? You will misunderstand me completely if you think that what I'm saying is meant to diminish the importance of people who minister from a lectern or a pulpit. I like what I do. I like sharing experiences with you to see how they confirm or are judged by the gospel. I like reading and trying to shape from my reading something useful to say to you. I like the feel of an audience, the psychology of our special kind of relationship. What I do here, I tell myself, has some importance. But I cannot treat a heart patient, or write a legal brief, or use an electron scanning microscope. And when believers do these things, they too are Christian ministers. I am one among many. And it is one of the deepest convictions I hold that we fulfill the hope of Christ when on each Sunday morning what we have at UCC is a convocation of ministers. The best thing I can do now is let you hear one more time the words of Jesus which were read before the sermon by Christine Park. I never feel much closer to what I perceive to have been his spirit than when I hear those unusual words. Listen. You must not allow yourselves to be called rabbi, since you have only one rabbi, master, and you are all brothers. You must call no one on earth your father, since you have only one father, and he is in heaven. The only superior among you is the one who serves the others. The one who serves the others. That means the one who is a minister in all the different ways by which we serve one another. Paul understood our calling when he said to the Thessalonians, "Look after your own business." In other words, your ministry is unique. If you don't carry it out, no one else can. Well, so ends a month of sermons about vocabulary. Next month, this is a trailer, a couple of talks about how the Bible itself works, about literalism and why it distorts the sacred scripture, about a view of the Bible which is called inerrancy and why it has no basis in reality, and some comments about what it takes to be a good interpreter of the book which sustains and feeds the life of this church. Talks I would like to have in our tape library if your children should need them, as most of them will sooner or later. But you are ready now, so please come.